For some, moving towards a greener economy feels like a loss.
You shut down the mines in a county that's population's only 38,000. What do we do?
For others, it's an opportunity.
We're a high-growth company, but the solar is the engine of our growth now.
I'm Kara Holsapple. So what would a cleaner energy economy mean for jobs? We'll hear from labor unions, solar manufacturers, and some four-legged workers.
Goats, goats, goats!
Stick around. President Obama is taking his climate action plan on the road. In Alaska, melting glaciers were a fitting backdrop for his call to reduce the carbon emissions that contribute to global warming. And in Nevada, the president was looking towards renewable energy to do it.
Yes, we've become the world's number one producer of oil and natural gas, but we've also become a major player in clean energy. And these advances have helped grow our economy and created a steady stream of well-paying jobs. They've also helped us reduce the dangerous emissions that contribute to climate change.
Obama's clean power plan is central to his climate goals. It would reduce carbon from coal-fired power plants by nearly a third by 2030. It also encourages more solar and other renewable energies. The final rule was just announced last month, but it's had people in coal country worried since it was first proposed by the EPA last year. That's when the Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier visited Greene County in the southwest corner of Pennsylvania, where one in five jobs relies on the coal industry. So let's go back to the summer of 2014 and take another listen to that story.
Blair Zimmerman worked 40 years in the coal industry. Now he's a commissioner for Greene County in the heart of coal country. So he watched intently as EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy announced the new carbon rules. And sometimes he talked back to her, even though she couldn't hear him through his computer screen.
And I think you're wrong. I think you're absolutely wrong.
Zimmerman is a Democrat. He supported President Obama. So he's not what you would call an EPA basher.
I have three grandsons. So I have mixed feelings. Even though I worked in the industry for almost 41 years, two most important things in our lifetime, you know, in everyone's lifetime, is clean air and clean water.
He did like some of what McCarthy said, like the ability of states to come up with their own carbon reduction plans. But he does worry about mines closing and what the industry means to his community.
Probably billions of dollars it brings to this community, you know, county, employment, taxes, services. And you shut down the mines in a county that's population's only 38,000, you know, what do we do?
It's a question many in the community may face in the next few years. By the EPA's own calculations, Appalachian coal production could decline by more than 30% under the new rule. Clyde Setti took the news in stride as he sat down to a blue cheeseburger at Hot Rod's Barbecue. Setti has been working in the coal field since he was 18.
I didn't go to college, didn't want to go to the military. My dad was a coal miner, my brother was a coal miner. So, in turn, I'm still a coal miner.
He was eating before his afternoon shift, working 1,800 feet underground at a mine run by CONSOL Energy. He's not surprised that the EPA is trying to cut down on carbon emissions. He, too, thinks that the climate is changing.
With polluting the atmosphere, I can understand, but, you know, you're going to cost a lot of people a lot of jobs, not only the coal mining jobs, all the other jobs that are affiliated with it. It's a sad situation, but, you know, the saying goes, you're going to fight City Hall.
But he wasn't buying the EPA's claim that the rule would create jobs in cleaner technologies, at least not here.
Yeah, they can say it's going to create new jobs, but if they don't train people, I don't see it happening, because this is a fairly depressed area. There's a lot of food service jobs here and jobs like that, but there's no big industry here to, you know, take care of all the jobs that people are going to lose over this.
Christina Simeone of Penn Future, an environmental group that supports the carbon limits, said she agrees that the government needs to pay more attention to places like Greene County that depend on coal as these regulations are implemented.
These are real people who are just trying to make a living, and they're seeing major changes happening, and that has to be a very scary reality. But what are we really doing to help these people out? And that's, I think, what is really missing here.
One possible option for some is the booming natural gas industry. But that industry is relatively new. Coal has been providing for families here for decades. Autumn Lascote runs a beauty parlor in Waynesburg. She said many of her clients have husbands who work in the mines. If they lose their jobs, businesses like hers will suffer.
When it comes between getting your hair colored and buying milk or bread or gasoline for your family, certainly you're going to buy the milk, bread, or gasoline.
As she colored a woman's hair, she worried her community will be asked to bear the brunt of the global climate problem. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Reed Frazier.
Since that story first aired last summer, the rules for drastically cutting emissions at coal-fired power plants have been finalized. Many people in coal regions still worry what it will mean for jobs. Others say transitioning to other forms of energy could provide even more jobs. Already, there are more than twice as many workers in the solar industry as there are coal miners. But the Allegheny Front's Julie Grant finds that government action at the state and federal levels could decide where and how big the solar industry grows.
On the factory floor at Talon Products in Cleveland, it's loud.
The sound you hear is the sound of solar parts being manufactured.
That's Talon's gregarious CEO, Steve Peplin. Smiling under his thick mustache, he shows off the plant. They take huge coils of metal and stamp it or shape it into all kinds of components. The small metal pieces in coffee makers and truck transmissions, brackets and bars for building construction. But increasingly, they've been making parts for the solar industry. They don't make solar panels. They make the parts that keep the panels in place.
You have to hold those panels on the roof. You have to mount them on something. We make the mounting systems.
The solar piece of the business is pretty new, but it's growing fast. Peplin says 5 years ago, solar accounted for only 3% of the company's business.
And then the next year it was 6 or 7%. In June this year, it was 18%.
Peplin says Talon plans to hire 75 new employees in the next few years in production, engineering, and purchasing.
We're a high-growth company, but the solar is the engine of our growth now.
Talon's not alone. A census of the solar industry found that as the demand for solar power grows each year, so does solar employment. Rick Umoff is with the Solar Energy Industries Association, a trade group.
Over the last decade, the industry has added about 100,000 new jobs. And today it employs about 175,000 Americans.
This is happening as the coal industry loses jobs, 50,000 lost in the past 5 years, according to one study. Fracking and the resulting low-cost electricity from natural gas are one reason coal is being replaced. Clean air regulations are another. Add to all this President Obama's push to tackle climate change. But dark days for coal look like good times for solar. And government policies, both state and federal, have been at the heart of solar's ascendance. The federal government has provided a tax credit for solar projects, and many states have renewable energy mandates. They require utilities to purchase a small percentage of power from solar, wind, and other renewable sources, even if it's more expensive. These are choices the government has made to jumpstart solar. But solar advocates worry that their momentum is in jeopardy. There's a pushback from the fossil fuel lobby, and many solar-friendly policies are being overturned. Todd Schneider is spokesperson for First Energy, an Akron, Ohio-based utility company that relies heavily on coal plants. They don't like the renewable energy subsidies.
We have to ensure that we do not set up rules that favor one source of generation over the other and that we lose these critical facilities.
Schneider says Ohio needs its coal-burning power plants to keep the lights on when the sun doesn't shine or the wind doesn't blow. But his company closed the last of three coal plants along Lake Erie this year, saying the costs of meeting new clean air standards were too high. First Energy also led a successful push to freeze Ohio's renewable energy mandates. Rick Umoff of the Solar Energy Industry Association says before the freeze, Ohio was considered a solar-friendly state. Not anymore.
It's fallen significantly in the rankings from one of the larger solar states to one of the smaller solar states. And that has a direct impact on jobs.
Umov says Ohio has about 430 solar industry jobs compared with 3,000 in neighboring Pennsylvania. Instead of embracing solar, Ohio has joined West Virginia, Michigan, and other states in fighting President Obama's Clean Power Plan. The plan could impact the solar industry. It limits carbon emissions from coal-fired power plants and encourages renewables. Umov says states that embrace the Clean Power Plan instead of fighting it can benefit from new solar businesses and jobs. But it takes time to set up any new industry.
And you start to have supply chain set up. You start to have customers, you become aware that the industry is there and in the state, and suddenly the cost of the technology and the cost of using renewables starts falling really fast.
At the Talon Products plant in Cleveland, CEO Steve Peplin says most of the solar parts they manufacture are shipped to New England or to the Southwest. He doesn't quite get why Ohio isn't pushing for new solar jobs. But his bigger concern is federal policy. The solar tax credit is scheduled to expire at the end of next year. It's a deadline the solar industry is dreading.
And I think all the industry is asking for is just kind of, you know, just a little more transition time and try to avoid the solar cliff that's we're facing, you know.
Peplin says companies like his can keep creating jobs. But instead of falling off the subsidy cliff, he wants the government to provide a gentle slope to help the industry. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Julie Grant.
Your lawn is a mess with overgrown weeds and a sapling that you're sure you didn't plant there. So you do a Google search, and a new landscaper pops up. They don't use chemicals. They just eat the weeds.
They don't care about itchy or thorny plants like poison ivy or blackberry or other thorns. They actually really like those plants.
Goats get the job done. That's later on the Allegheny Front's Labor Day show. Don't miss it. Blue-collar work and labor unions. The two have been synonymous for decades. But as some traditional blue-collar industries like coal are being lost, labor unions are regrouping and finding new allies, like environmentalists. Kim Glass is the new executive director of the Blue-Green Alliance. It's a partnership of 10 labor unions and 5 environmental groups that pushes for green job growth. I recently spoke with Glass about how the two movements are now working together. Have labor and the environmental movement been historically at odds?
You know, I think that the labor and environmental movements aren't movements that have naturally worked together over the years until much more recently. And the vision of the Blue-Green Alliance was started by Leo Gerard, the president of the United Steelworkers and the Sierra Club, to really bring a collaboration together and push a common agenda.
And what's the common agenda?
How do we address climate change that actually creates jobs here in this country and provides opportunities for our workforce, whether you're addressing carbon mitigation, whether you're addressing fuel efficiency in the auto sector. I mean, there's a variety of ways that you can see an economy moving forward that addresses our environmental concerns, but also addresses our economic ones.
I think when people think of a steelworkers union, they think dirty jobs. What is a green job? Or I think your organization uses the word clean jobs.
There's probably a pretty big umbrella. I mean, a lot of people would automatically assume it's wind and solar. But a lot of workers work at companies that employ industrial energy efficiency technologies. SEIU has a program that helps certify and train green janitors. So there's janitors that are working in huge buildings, and what can janitors do on the ground there to ensure that buildings are meeting targets in terms of energy efficiency in the buildings? So these are both service and manufacturing jobs.
Is there any resistance in the labor movement towards going forward with green jobs rather than, you know, traditional industries where people have had these high-paying jobs in the past?
You know, I think in Pennsylvania, you've seen workers who have worked in the coal industry and has very well seen as the energy transformation has hit Pennsylvania and other states have lost their jobs. And BGA, the Blue-Green Alliance, has strongly committed to working on a just transition for these workers. And when I'm talking about a just transition, it's not here's an unemployment check. This is really trying to get workers who are highly skilled, highly paid, who work in impacted industries into other industries.
What kinds of transitions, what would be like a step-by-step process?
Right. So we were very pleased when the administration announced the Power Plus program, which ensures a security for workers who may be losing their pensions if they are employed in the coal industry and how to shore that up, but also around the economic development for certain counties and communities who've been impacted by a coal-fired power plant closing down and what can be done there in terms of federal resources. The issue here is Congress has not allocated the full funding necessary to make sure that this program is fully realized.
How important is legislation and buy-in from the government when it comes to creating and sustaining green jobs?
There's got to be definitely buy-in both on the federal and state level. It's been very hard as Congress has not extended the wind production tax credit. That has led to uncertainty in the market, and as wind manufacturers are looking for opportunities to expand their production and try to employ more people, they're looking for leadership coming out of the U.S. Congress to ensure that these types of tax credits are extended and that there is reliability and certainty in the marketplace. That's not a partisan issue. I mean, that is just the reality of trying to ensure that the renewable energy sector also has opportunities to grow and expand what has been successful in the past.
You mentioned a little bit about the work that you're doing in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania and Ohio are two states where the Blue-Green Alliance has active programs. What are some of the other kinds of projects you're working on in our sort of formerly Rust Belt region where many of these high-wage union jobs in steel and coal have been lost?
We've also worked on a Repair America campaign, the idea that we can repair our infrastructure across the United States to ensure that it's much more climate resistant. At the state level in Pennsylvania, you have natural gas distribution pipelines that are made of bare steel. That's more than 10,000 miles of leak-prone pipes throughout the state. You know, as we all know, in Allentown, five people were killed in 2011 because of a gas explosion, and that didn't need to happen simply by repairing our infrastructure, these leaky pipes. That could put a lot of people to work. It also addresses environmental and health concerns.
I feel like a lot of people feel like labor unions are old-fashioned or they're no longer relevant in our current economy. Can you speak to that?
Labor has seen a decline in recent years. I think we all know that. But labor is absolutely 100% key to ensuring that there is a middle class in this country. Labor unions brought you the weekend. They fought for things like worker protections. Labor is key to our economic prosperity. And I think, you know, unfortunately, certain people have painted labor to say that they're the old industry. Labor is doing many things cutting edge. We just went to a training facility for the plumbers and pipe fitters, a major union both in Pennsylvania and Ohio and other states. They are investing $250 million a year into their workforce to ensure that their employees who are going through the apprenticeship program are trained with the best skills, that when something is installed, you're going to realize the energy savings. We've got to do a better job telling our own story.
That was Kim Glass, executive director of the Blue-Green Alliance. We've got a lot more stories about jobs and the economy and the environment on our website. That's AlleghenyFront.org. This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holsapple.
It's been a hard day's night, and I've been working like a dog. It's been a hard day's night, I should be sleeping like a log. But when I get home to you, I find the things that you do will make me feel alright. You know I work all day to get your money to buy a thing, and it's worth it just to hear you say you're gonna give me everything. So why on earth should I moan? 'Cause when I get you alone, you know I feel.
Of course, green jobs aren't new. In 2009, as the economy was tanking, newly elected President Obama was looking for ways to keep the U.S. out of a depression. He saw improving energy efficiency, increasing renewable energy, and training for green jobs as ways to boost employment numbers. The president named lawyer and author Van Jones as the nation's first green job czar. Jones' appointment lasted only a few months. There was a lot of political turmoil around his past activism, and he resigned. But he's still one of the strongest voices for green jobs in the country. Last fall, Jones spoke in Pittsburgh. Here's an excerpt when he recalled the moment he first put two and two together about the potential and the challenge of marrying green jobs and community development near his home in Northern California.
I've met all these good, smart business people. They're creating companies that sell solar panels. They're creating companies that energy efficiency and weatherization. They're starting to invest in wind energy technology. And I thought to myself, you know, this green movement is also about green. It's about money. And these people are starting businesses. And I said, well, I wonder who they're going to hire. And I said, you know, wait, hold on a second now. You got all these kids in Oakland that need work. And you have all these new green companies that need workers. And then you got the most important work that needs to be done. And then you've got all these kids who right now are standing around on street corners getting in trouble. I said, what if you could connect the people who most need work to the work that most needs to be done? Maybe you could fight pollution and poverty at the same time. Maybe you could have these kids standing in front of my house getting on my nerves, on top of my house put up solar panels. Or weatherizing my neighbor's house so she can save money on her energy bill. And this was just an epiphany to me. And I thought to myself, you know, this idea is genius. This is a great idea. And I could not wait to get home to explain it to my friends. And I got them all together at the community center. And I began explaining to them how amazing it could be if we could just get Oakland and Marin County together and we could have green jobs and we could help the earth. And I, when I got finished, I mean, I was, you know, I was moved to tears myself. I mean, I was so impressed. And my friends kind of sat there in Oakland looking at each other. And one of them kind of raised his hand. He says, when you say green jobs, you mean jobs with money? And I realized they had no idea what I was talking about. Went back to Marin, I started explaining the whole green jobs, not jails thing to them, and they were very enthusiastic about the green jobs part, but they couldn't understand what the jails had to do with it. And then I got depressed. And I spent years going around just trying to stitch together in my little community just enough of a coalition to try it. Long story short, we were able finally to get the Oakland City Council to create something called the Oakland Green Jobs Corps. And it worked. We were able to get some young folks who had gotten in trouble or about to get in trouble trained. And we were able to go to these solar companies and say, listen, you guys, you got the right policies in California now. You got the right product in California. You've got consumer demand. But how long has it taken you from order to implementation? 3 months, 6 months, 9 months? People who have got money and want the solar panels up are waiting 9 months after they paid you to get the solar panels on their house because solar panels don't put themselves up. You got to have workers. You got to have people. I got people. And look, we didn't solve every problem in Oakland, but for those couple of dozen young people, we made a big difference.
That was Van Jones, former special advisor on green jobs to President Obama. He spoke about community health and the green economy in Pittsburgh last fall. You can hear more from that talk at our website, AlleghenyFront.org. Labor Day may have us thinking about unions and manufacturing, but smaller scale entrepreneurs are also adding environmentally friendly jobs to the economy. The Allegheny Front's Lou Bluin caught up with some green entrepreneurs in Pittsburgh. They're finding unique ways to address the city's landscaping needs.
Calling Deirdre Price's new backyard a yard might just be a little bit generous.
So we basically got five lots, three and a half, or a hillside that is completely covered with bramble and brush and poison ivy and stuff like that.
And that's not an uncommon thing in Pittsburgh. Look around and you'll see hundreds of skinny homes stacked on hillsides like candles on a tiered birthday cake. The big lot, though, which is about a quarter acre in all, is a big reason Deirdre bought the house. Clearing the yard, though, and turning it into something worthy of the name, for that she had to call on a special breed of landscaper.
Goats, goats, goats! Goats, goats, goats!
This is Carrie Pavlik, and she's out here today with her co-workers, which include 9 goats, her husband Doug, and, oh yeah, a guard donkey.
Hobo! The donkey's name is Hobo.
So here's how any of this makes any sense. Carrie and Doug recently started a goat landscaping business, which basically means they use goats to clear overgrown properties like Deirdre's. So about a week ago, Doug set up a temporary electric fence around Deirdre's property. They brought over the goats and the donkey.
The donkey is a livestock guardian. If a coyote were to breach the fence, he would chase them off.
Okay, and then they pretty much just let the goats do what goats do, which is, in this case, to eat their way through the wilderness of Deirdre's backyard.
Goats can go places that human landscapers and machinery can't, like steep slopes or tight spaces. They don't care about itchy or thorny plants like poison ivy or blackberry or other thorns. They actually really like those plants.
And Doug says in about 2 weeks, they'll have cleared this entire quarter acre.
Yeah, I mean, goats are, I think, particularly advantageous for parcels that maybe fall in between like what's easy for a homeowner to do and what's easy for a brush hog to do.
Using goats rather than heavy machinery like brush hogs has other benefits too. For one, goats are a lot quieter and don't disturb neighbors, despite all those screaming goat YouTube videos you may have seen.
We think it's fake, but we're not sure. I mean, we've never heard a goat scream like that.
And goats are also greener. They don't run on gasoline, and they can quickly chew through stubborn plants that would usually require spraying herbicides. Goats are so tenacious, in fact, they even get at roots and seeds, so unwanted plants don't come back. And the only collateral damage to speak of from having a herd roam your property actually has a silver lining.
So the goat poop, you won't really see that around because it's very small, it's dry, it's just great fertilizer, we leave it.
I'd say that goat poop is the most pleasant of the poops.
Money-wise, the goats aren't cheap. Deirdre is renting Carrie and Doug's for about 2 weeks for $10 a day per goat, plus another $10 a day for Hobo the donkey, plus a setup fee for the electric fence. All told, it's gonna cost her about $1,500. Deirdre admits she didn't even call around to get quotes from other landscapers. She wanted the goats out here mostly because she thought they were cool. And she says the neighborhood's been digging them too.
The kid up the street has pretty well convinced his mother, who's pretty well convinced his father, to get goats.
In fact, the neighborhood at large may be catching goat fever. Bob Steele, one of Deirdre's neighbors, has been watching the goats from next door. He says his lawn is begging for a small herd.
I stare longingly over the fence, saying I wish they were mine. I'm hoping. You're talking to the person who has to mow 3/4 of an acre and it's on a hill.
Bob could get his wish and get some help with that hill. The city of Pittsburgh recently revised its livestock ordinance to clear the way for homeowners to keep goats, much like people keep backyard chickens now. And for Carrie and Doug, business is booming. They're already booked up through the fall and hope to double the size of their landscaping herd and hire an employee next year. There are certainly enough overgrown hillsides in Pittsburgh to keep the herd going for a while. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Lou Bluen.
Thanks for listening to the Allegheny Front. Kathy Naur is the executive producer. Julie Grant's our managing editor. I'm Carol Holsapple. If it's not too much work for you on this Labor Day holiday weekend, like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. We're at Allegheny Front. And join us again next time for more environmental news around your home on the Allegheny Front.
Support for the Allegheny Front comes from the Heinz Endowments, the Pittsburgh Foundation, and the Foundation for Pennsylvania Watersheds. The Richard King Mellon Foundation supports coverage of energy and conservation.